Andre, ace actress and top correspondent, now live on the Midweek Drive with another audio letter from upstate New York.
Hurrah! Actually, it's not New York. Let's face it. It's we still haven't managed to do the editing version of that. You haven't been in New York for nearly a year now, still.
That's right.
But then we're still on the planet, so that's the important thing. Annette Andre, welcome to the production. Wonderful as ever to touch base with your good self. I'll do my usual round of introductions for the fantastic foursome we have in the studio. We have Katie Dorr. I'm not sure, Katie, whether you've spoken to Annette Andre before.
I think we spoke a few weeks ago when I was last on, actually.
Yeah, well, there we are. Katie's back with us, which is great. Kat, of course, publicist, I think you have spoken to me before.
In terms
five episodes of The Saint with Roger Moore. And indeed, last night I was treating myself to the Annette Andre episode of The Persuaders with Roger Moore and Tony Curtis.
Oh,
the number called Power Switch. He was a fine dancer there. Lionel Blair was doing the choreography.
Never.
He was. He was indeed.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That's truly wonderful. And that's before we can get into Randall and Hopkirk, deceased, and the original genie. Then Best,
terrific.
Of course. Jessica Ward, of course, back with us before she goes to the Isle of Man.
Yep. Escaping.
And we have our photographer Nick Elliott. So there we are. What delights. I mean, after last time, which basically had us in tears of joy and just, you know, the bear, you know, Annette and the bear.
Yes.
Actually, it was truly wonderful. We had the tale of the bear. What are you going to share with us this month with the Annette Andre audio missive from California?
Well, it's a little different this time, and it's called Move Over, Mr. Rembrandt, I'm Spinning With You. My letter this month was to have examined the collapse of spoken English into 12 words that apparently satisfy all needs. Leading the pack is awesome, followed closely by reaching out, and that mother of all maladies, like. But a chance reading of an obituary shifted the heel of my scorn to an American conceptual artist called Chris Burden. I've placed massive quotation marks around conceptual artist because, for the life of me, I can't conceive how this sideshow of narcissism merits a handshake with art. Mind you, I needed only two exhibitions of this modern take on P.T. Barnum's stock in trade to reacquaint myself that there's a sucker born every minute. The first was at the Chelsea School of Art when my daughter was a student. I instantly established my heathen DNAs by entering the student exhibition between two long rows of flickering candles set in mason jars. "Pardon me, madam," an unseen voice boomed. "Please step off the installation." My daughter flushed with terminal embarrassment at her clueless parent and pointed out that at least I'd had the nouns to have chosen the grand prize winner to violate. My second and last exposure to what I've come to think of as a selfie industry was at the Charles Saatchi Sensation exhibition at London's Royal Academy in 1997. Two displays scar my memory to this day. Tracy Emin's Everyone I Have Ever Slept With, 1963 to 1995. A canvas tent filled with the names of her victims emblazoned in various sizes of signage. The second was Damien Hirst's plexiglass cubicle containing a raw chunk of meat being devoured by a heaving mass of flies and maggots, accompanied by an appropriate stench. That this exhibition was wall-to-wall plucked from Saatchi's personal collection is no wonder the contents and this advert huckster are mirror images of a hype designed to startle and attract an audience of collectors heavy with dosh and light on critical judgment. But the recently deceased Chris Burden followed quite another path to fame, if not fortune, by using his own body as the canvas for his art. If you call having yourself shot, pierced, starved, crucified, electrified, dropped from heights, kicked downstairs, and nearly drowned a creative use of one's body. I'd never heard of Mr. Burden, but what caught my eye in the obit was a photo of him taken in 1974, splayed on a Volkswagen Beetle, as if crucified. And indeed he was. Nails driven through his hands and feet and into the car's metal. He titled this performance Transfixed, which of course instantly cleared up any confusion as to the work's meaning. In a public protest against the Vietnam War, he had himself shot in the arm at close range in a Los Angeles art gallery in front of a sold-out audience. Again, in a gracious nod to viewers who might not connect the war with the bullet wound, Mr. Burden titled the event Shoot. But let me pause here to assure you that Mr. Burden was not unwashed in underpinning his work with serious academic study, having secured a Master of Fine Arts degree from the University of California. For his thesis, he submitted a work entitled Five-Day Locker Piece, in which he origamied himself into a small student locker with a five-gallon bottle of water and an empty jug for the water's inevitable outcome. He emerged 5 days later and was awarded his degree. This vetting of his talent was followed over the years by performances such as Through the Night Softly, in which he crawled naked over a field of broken glass, Doorway to Heaven, where he sent electrical shocks to his chest from live wires, Kunstkick, which saw him booted down a steep flight of stairs at the Basel Art Fair, and White Light, White Heat, where he camped out on a towering platform for 22 days and nights without food. Why, you may well ask, am I getting my knickers in a twist over a man I didn't know existed when he was working his voodoo on the art world, much less now that he's punted across the River Styx? I'm beside myself because the Burdens and Saatches of this world are metaphors for a climate that revels in the shoddy and unaccomplished, where anyone with a gimmick, the shallower or more offensive the better, can capture a huge audience on YouTube and Facebook that in a more reflective society would send them to bed without supper. Given an audience with the average attention span of a fruit fly, whatever captures the most attention is enough until the next distraction comes along. The worth of something is no longer measured in time or substance, but by the immediacy of buzz and likability. Oh, I'm convinced that for all his bells and whistles, there was a wide boy's smirk behind Burden's public antics, shared by the dealers peddling his twaddle to a market who equates art and hedge funds with equal calculation. Where once we inherited a father's wristwatch or a mother's silver plate that served a lifetime, we've traded yesterday's values for empty celebrity and group identity. Here today, but don't count on tomorrow. I'm hardly a fan of Mr. Burden's creative process, much less its results, but as a fellow busker of sorts, I'd like to be able to report that after a lifetime of attempting to destroy himself on the public stage, he met his end in a suitably gothic manner. But none of those bells and whistles sounded his passing. He exited not the perpetrator, but a victim. And yet, I can't help wondering if he hadn't had a hand in staging that final touch of irony. And that's it.
Well, when you were actually saying about being electrocuted, locked up, crucified, and advertised, I thought you were talking about my life as an academic at the University of Lincoln. But no, clearly, we've moved on from that. But it does. We had a look at the lockers, and we did suggest. I mean, you know, possibly Katie, we put that forward as a possible way of new, bold, and ambitious ways of assessing students. Only kidding.
I think so. Yes.
But Nick, performance artistry, because obviously as a photographer and an artist, it has to be said, this is an interesting thing that Annette's really touched upon here. And we said in terms of that whole performance art sort of aspect, what are your views on what we just heard?
Well, first of all, can I say, Annette, that was fascinating. I listened with immense depth in what you was actually talking about and reading. It was fantastic and touched me in very many ways. I have a very, very deep passion for throwaway art, and I mean, one of the sole reasons I do what I do is to be the best, to leave a mark, and to leave it long after I've gone.
Right, good.
So I can relate very much to what you're saying, in like I say, in respect of throwaway art. It's a very strange concept. It is what people think they can get away with, and how people look at pieces and art, and it is what they want it to be and what they believe it to be. And I think in a lot of cases, what they're told it is to be.
That's absolutely right. You've hit the nail on the head. Absolutely. And I'm so glad you think the way you do.
There are still some of us left. We could spend a lot of time talking, you and me, about these kind of things.
That's a whole new series.
Indeed.
Jessica, as a new generation, what are your thoughts on what we just heard? Throwaway art and a photographer yourself, of course.
Yeah. I also agree with Nick, the fact that how you read that, it's really compelling, and my attention was with you the whole time.
I thought she was reaching out to us, and it was like awesome. Like.
Well.
Yes.
Probably
not. Go on with that about at length as well. I could say that at length.
Technically, awesome. OMG, Annette. OMG.
But on terms of his art, I personally don't quite understand it. But that's because his personality is different to mine. So, but I think it is important to accept that art is carried out in different ways. And that,
Katie.
I've got an enormous respect for any artist that's prepared to put themselves out there in that way. But I don't necessarily understand it, but I admire that. It's almost like, please look at me and please.
Because I went to the Performing Arts Centre last year
to
see.
Me, me, me. Unfortunately, it's the me, me, me concept.
Yeah.
Look at me. And anything will account, and it's equated with art.
I'm sorry, Annette, just briefly, could you go? I went across to the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, and I won't mention the actual performance because that would be unfair, but comprised of basically somebody rolling around in front of us in cream caramel and basically creating a whole range of other things. And two people I was with thought, it's fantastic. I thought, what? And I just thought, is it me? And it was just one of those areas where you just thought, well, and you get into that whole notion. Personally, I'd like to prefer that every 7,200 seconds or 2 hours every Wednesday between 5 and 7, we're creating great audio art. So that's what we do. You know, it resonates. Particularly when you're on with a letter from America, Annette. Kat, your thoughts on what we just heard?
Yeah, audio art and all of that, but you're not shooting yourself in the arm or pinning yourself to a Volkswagen Beetle.
Well, not yet, of course.
Not yet. There may come a time.
No, absolutely. I do agree with you, Annette, actually. I think the difficulty is that, like beauty, art is in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? And I suppose it's an indictment of society and how it's changed as to how people perceive that. But I think you've just said something really important, and I think this is what the crux of art should be. It should be about creating something that somebody else is going to appreciate rather than it being all about the creator. And I think what you've just described there is all about the creator and the me society. So is that really art? I don't know.
I frankly don't find masochism art.
No,
frankly,
I totally agree.
That's masochism.
I think
and it's totally me, 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 and it's somebody who is self-destructive, had to be angry, gosh knows what, could have, you know. I just don't find it, and I don't find that a row of candles in a mason jar linked by a piece of string, which is the one I actually trod into with my daughter.
You're a vandal. A vandal, Annette. A cultural vandal. Dear Lord.
I had no idea.
Having said that,
actually part of the art exhibition. And my daughter was studying there. Even she rolled her eyes and said, well, I don't think I want to stay.
You could have said that all you were doing, Annette, was engaging with the art as a citizen of the planet. That was all you were doing in that.
You were engaging actively and proactively with the art. I was there to experience it.
Precisely. Last two questions for Annette André. Please, Jessica.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Oh, yes, I have, very much.
Oh, lovely.
Has it been artistically fulfilling for you?
And will we be hearing from you soon?
Yes, next month.
Exactly. Yeah, that would be June. Exactly. In fact, next time you'll be with us, right in the middle of our Lincolnshire show day. Fantastic. Extraordinary. Coming up next, as he just sent us an email, hopefully we'll be live with New York again with Peter Franklin. And a round of applause for Annette André, please.
Yay!
a genuine. Mind you, that Lionel Blair dance sequence in the Persuaders episode, I mean, that to me was great art. You know, that's we need to see that immortalised. Classic.
It was a bit of bump and grind, really.
You can't beat a bit of bump and grind, that's my motto. Dreadful. Amy Grant, the alternative paradise mix of Big Yellow Taxi. A nice way to segue into our Big Yellow Taxi driver, the legend from New York, who's going to talk about Memorial Day, the real meaning of Memorial Day, plus more. That would be Peter Franklin. How are you, Peter?
I am fine, but, you know, this is really late breaking news because I happen to be in Brooklyn, where the Federal Eastern District Court is, and just a few minutes ago they announced that the people who run the World Cup and all of the soccer are a bunch of crooks.
No. Sepp Blatter and his boys, surely some mistake. Deary Lord. I mean, did you...
Well, and you know what's amazing is that I've said it for years. They're a bunch of pompous rats, really. Excuse me for getting hysterical. But the thing that sticks in my craw, and this gets back to my general attitude towards journalism, ethics, and morality, I will say to you, there is not one sports journalist, either print, television, or radio, in this world who didn't know that fact.
And once again, Peter Franklin, finger on the pulse. Memorial Day.
Well, it means nobody there today is getting a job as a sports journalist ever again.
Now, Peter, who knows what could actually happen as long as they actually read your book, and indeed one of two books, because you're actually offering a free edition of your first book, The Gabby Cabby, if you order your second book, which is fantastic. It's genius stuff, though.
There is no hitch to it. No, you can have the first book. It doesn't make Barnes & Noble happy, because they sell it and I'm giving it away for nothing. But I figured it's been around long enough. So, no, if anybody wants to, they can just send me an email at peter@gabby.com and I'll give them the download link. But they don't have to buy anything. That's
Jessica, involved. Will you be doing that?
I'll be doing that. She'll benefit me.
It'll help you in the Isle of Man. Exactly. Yeah. And Jessica is going into her second year as a journalism student at the University of Lincoln. So, you know.
Well, as long as she stays away from sports, she'll be okay.
I'll do that.
So, Memorial Day, as somebody who, before you actually entered the world of the yellow mobile conveyancing lounge that is the New York taxi scenario, you were in the US Army, both active and reserve. You had three children, all career soldiers, and Memorial Day was being celebrated on Monday. Share with us the meaning, Peter, across the Atlantic.
Well, first of all, it's supposed to be on May 30th, someplace along the line. They came up with the idea to link it to a weekend so that everybody would get a three-day holiday, which, I don't know, makes me feel a little uncomfortable. But in any event, they do it, and that's it. So actually, the real Memorial Day is May 30th. But in any event, it is a big day because it memorializes all of the wars that we've been in. And it's a special day for Mrs. Franklin and myself because we still have our three kids. And I can remember a time as they went into the Army, as they went off to combat, people would say to us, you know, you'll be very lucky if you get all three back. You know, you're bound to lose one, if you catch my drift. Well, we didn't lose one, and we have all three. So Memorial Day is a special, special day for us by the very fact that we do have the kids. They're all alive and well, still in the Army, still subject, I guess, one of these days to danger again. But for the moment, they're all stationed in the United States.
Which makes it perfectly so straightforward. Katie, any questions for Peter?
Well, I'm from Lincolnshire, which is, as you probably know, a big RAF bomber county, it sometimes gets called. But my family, we don't have a history of serving in the armed forces, and it's a really important thing to a lot of people I know. And I get the sense there's a real community as a result of that for people that have served. Is that the same thing in the States?
Yeah, but even more so, I think it gives you a certain degree of discipline. And frankly, it's not really that long. You know, if you do the full deal in the United States, do 20 years until you can get your retirement and be a pensioner. Well, if you go in at 18, that means you're retired at 38. That's not too much to ask. And then you go into another career. So it's a very good thing. And people who come out of the military, generally in the United States, get any job they want because they feel that they're more disciplined, they're more trained, you know how to get along with people. The war aspect has changed, whereas we once had a big deal, World War II. Now the U.S. Army, unfortunately or fortunately, is the world's policeman. So that's why we're still getting involved in these things. But other than that minor little aspect of the war part of it, it's a very, very good thing to join in the States. Benefits are terrific.
I've got to ask you, Peter, about one of your true tales from this week, the fact that doormen have been quitting their jobs at a luxury rental building in Brooklyn that was once a hospital, spooked by eerie visions, sounds and even smells, sparking talk that this high-rise is haunted. What's going on with the 123 on the Park building, Peter?
Well, that's exactly what it was. It was once a hospital, and now the tenant, and it was turned into a high-rise expensive apartment building. You know, redeveloped and everything because they didn't have enough patients anymore. They didn't need it to be a hospital anymore, so they reconfigured it. And now tenants are beginning to complain that they hear wailing and noises at night and, I guess, chains clanking. A number of the tenants have moved out. They've had a succession of doormen who have left, not wanting to stay there. So you know that next time we talk, that will already be in production as a movie, right?
Makes sense. In all sorts of ways. And indeed also...
Now, by the way, that's what you might do because of your connection with a hospital.
Well, this is true, yes. Yeah.
People should start talking about chains and things in night, and you too will have a movie made of you.
It's a thought. You know, hospitals, universities, they're all very scary. Let's wrap up with a little feature on the vendor who was selling hot dogs at a mere $30 near the 9/11 memorial. He's actually been fired, but meanwhile the World Trade Center Observatory gift shop is selling a $175 polo shirt and a $200 pullover. Surely, you know, you can't eat pullovers or polo shirts.
No, of course not. And then let me tell you something. Anybody, I don't care from where in the world that they come from, if some guy wants to charge you $30 for a hot dog, for that matter, translating it into your funny money, that wants to charge you £30 for a hot dog, I mean, give me a break. How stupid can you be? So he was taking advantage of people's stupidity. But right inside, if you want to go to the World Trade Center Memorial and Roof Garden, it's going to cost you $65 a person. A family of four, you're talking about close to $300 to go into the place. I mean, so talk about ripping somebody off. I think the hot dog guy is a minor league compared to the institution itself.
And vegetarians amongst us will obviously sort of say, well, you shouldn't pay $30 for any sort of meat product. But there we are. That's a different line entirely. Peter, it's been slightly shorter than normal, but have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Santa, as I always say, it's my mental therapy. You let me rant and rage. You let me rant and rage, and I feel better. See, now I feel I struck a blow against the World Cup Federation, so I feel good.
So I take it we can join up with you again in the very near future, probably sometime in June?
Absolutely, absolutely.